Hello and welcome to the Volunteer Firefighter Podcast. My name is Scott. I'm surrounded by, literally surrounded by three other guys.
I've got Ash.
Hey there.
And Todd.
Hello.
And Rob.
Hi. So before we go any further,
what?
I've been waiting for this moment. So my wife called you out on something.
What?
So Todd and I were always like, oh, we're joined with two members of my firefighting family.
Dang.
My family's talks like, nah, I got these idiots. I see where we rank.
Yeah. Yeah, the family thing, I don't know. It's all right. I'm just kidding. Anyways, what are we talking about? We are talking about an MBI up in our area the other day, one of our calls. It actually turned out to be pretty much nothing. Well, it was definitely an MBI.
Yeah.
I guess maybe you should tell the story, Ash, since you actually called me.
Yeah, so well, I was sitting at home, and I was just about to head uptown. So I'm grabbing my keys and about to walk out the door. And my phone rings. And it's Todd. And he's like, hey, buddy, what's going on? And I could hear in the background, wee, wee. I'm like, what's up? He's like, are you guys going to this call? I'm like, nope, that's on. I haven't heard anything. Nope. He's like, oh, shit. Well, there's a call, single vehicle, MBI. In your area, but like on the border, blah, blah, blah. I'm like, no, man, we haven't heard anything. He's like, okay, stand by. So you make a call to your dispatch, right?
Yeah, we started getting updates on our CAD that fire department was not responding. Single vehicle, but multiple patients, unknown injuries, high velocity. And then they actually radioed us and saying, no, this is out of fire's area. So they're not responding, which is kind of odd because usually we just get the update on the CAD.
Right.
So then I was thinking, I was like, well, wait a minute, there's no way. Like this is in the area.
Mm-hmm.
And on the information we have at hand, it sounded like it could absolutely be something where we need more people.
Yeah.
Because the first ambulance that was probably going to be arriving was coming from town, and it's quite a ways up the hill, up this road. It's a gravel road.
Yeah.
And we were coming from the other valley, which I think dispatch, we were sent to come in a second car.
Right.
But in their theory, we were going to be traveling all the way around down the Highway 3, back to Highway 97.
So you guys went off the top.
And we're, again, no, we're taking, oh, that's, taking, oh, the, okay, we're that's taking the bumpy road. Yeah, we're in Caribbean.
Right, okay. I didn't know
so I quickly said to my partner, I was like, how good are you driving fast on shitty forestry roads? He's like, ah, pretty good. I'm like, all right, over the top. And yeah, so we hit the bush road going up over the top. And then, of course, we lost cell service immediately.
Right.
So I was glad that I was able to make that phone call to you, Ash, quickly to see if we could get you guys going.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so at that point, I'm already in my pickup. I started driving the town. I phoned dispatch and basically asked if they have gotten a request yet. And at that point, they're like, no, there's only two of us here. We haven't heard anything. I'm like, okay, well, can you build us a call? So I give as much of the information that I got from Todd, and the call comes in, and I quickly send out a text to the officer group, incoming call, MBI, blah, blah, blah. By that time, I'm pulling up to the hall here, and I just open up the door. I'm starting to put on my gear, and I see Scott pulling. I'm like, oh, man, he must have also been driving.
I do not know anything about this.
No.
I was stopping to get something for 7 hours, and I'm like,
yeah,
that's the rescue truck door opening. Like,
yeah.
And then, whoo, oh, sweet.
So, yeah, it was perfect. Yeah, so we assembled the crew pretty quick. Rob answered the radio. He's on duty this week as the duty officer. And you were basically responding immediately.
Yeah.
You were rolling. We had four people come pretty quick. And then there was a bit of a lull. So I radioed you and said, hey, do you want us to leave with four? And then maybe fill up the bush truck. So, again, where this is a pretty... not remote, like it's very well kept, but it's a mountain pass dirt road.
It's definitely remote.
Yeah. Yeah. So like we're going first gear. Like you might be code three lights and sirens, but you're like you can almost walk as
fast. We had turned off the code three every once.
Yeah.
A couple times going up because we're like
because it's just no so slow.
Even our we barely made it up the first hill.
Yeah.
It was getting a little rough. Yeah.
But we do provide road rescue because it is a very frequented access road.
Mm-hmm.
yeah, so we ended up doing that. And the entire chat on the truck is like, let's make good time so the bush truck doesn't pass us. Because that might have happened on a recent call.
Earlier this week, or last week. That's right. Yeah, so I guess, once we arrived, it actually was a pretty good accident. And it was actually quite amazing.
Because
it was vehicles, the truck, pickup truck wrapped around a tree. Well, by the time we got, Rob had got there, gave us an update and said patient self-extricated and they were with you guys.
And you arrived literally 2 minutes after I arrived.
Okay.
Well, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I got there and Todd was there and had a face-to-face with him. And yeah, that's when I updated you guys. And,
So we arrived and started doing just checking battery and make sure there's no fire and
seeing safety stuff.
I'm kind of poking my head inside and looking around. And one of the other guys is disconnecting the battery. And I'm like, and then suddenly I'm like, hey, man, there's no airbag deployment here. So I was like, pull my head out of there. Screwing around the battery. And then I called Rob. And they let Todd and everybody else know that there's no airbag deployment. Because I don't know what the injuries were.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and Rob did that. He came and knocked on the door and stuck his head in and told us that as well. Because we didn't quite get all that info. Because the one serious patient, he went with the other crew, and then we had kind of the two walking minor wounded people.
Yeah.
So
yeah, I had talked to both crews, let them know.
Mm-hmm.
But
that was the first time an accident that severe without an airbag component.
Pretty much head on with
the tree. Head on the tree. The tree was like wrapped around.
that tree was embedded into the engine. Oh, yeah. That was a pretty high rate of speed impact. And crazy that, you know, the injuries were, I don't want to call them minor, but like we were anticipating with the info and then even seeing the vehicle, I'm surprised that the truck was in good enough shape where they could open the doors and walk out. And then B, that the two of them were walking.
That's right.
Right.
There was a couple of points where they went off the road. It looked like if any momentum either way, they could have just barrel rolled.
Sure.
And it would have been absolutely a little bit worse.
Yeah.
Yeah, they're pretty lucky at the one section where they went off because it was kind of semi-flat coming around the corner. But like you said, Rob, like if they deviated slightly to either side with some of the rocks and stuff, it would have been a very simple flip over, right?
Mm-hmm. So I guess we didn't have to do much on this call, but let's take it to other calls we've been on and let's talk about. Todd, you obviously go to a lot of accidents. You go to accidents all over the region. Right? You don't just go because, like you said, you're on the other side of the valley. So you obviously go to a lot of different calls. You see a lot of different styles of auto extrication, of stabilization, of whatever. Mm-hmm. What are the minimum do's and don'ts in your eyes as a paramedic, or as you're a firefighter too? So.
Yeah, I think. Anybody who's kind of dual trained on which other side you're responding on, it's kind of nice because you have the other job you can kind of lean on for the information as well. But, you know, like anytime you have people in the vehicle still, specifically, like we want to make sure the vehicle's safe. Because, like, as we roll up, you know, as a paramedic, I want the fire department's job is to make it safe for us and the patients as well, right?
Yeah.
And as a medic, it's hard because, like, if fire department's not there, we have no means to do any of that stuff. I can't be cutting battery cables and disconnecting things.
So what do you really do if you arrive there first?
Patient contact, be as safe as we can. If we need to somehow access the vehicle to get to the patient. Normally, if the vehicles are stabilized, we can enter the cabin if need be to provide advanced care if necessary.
Right.
But then there's those scenarios where it's either rolled over or it's on its side where it's still unstable, where we're probably not going to be entering.
Right.
So then it's just as best you can outside. So
is it a common thing that you guys get there before fire?
Not really.
Yeah. I was wondering that because obviously you guys are at the station full-time, fully staffed now. I mean, you guys aren't coming from Pedro.
It depends. I don't know, man. It's a tough one to say. 50-50, maybe. Like, sometimes we'll arrive pretty quick, but even as we're just doing the quick little triage and patient assessment, by the time we're updating, you usually fire whichever community is rolling up pretty fast.
Right.
Yeah. Well, you just said something about stabilization. I mean, that's important to have us rolling to provide that stabilization for EHS, because if you can't go in and make contact with the patient, you know, best to whatever that stabilization is. It could be a couple of wedges if it's rolled over on the hood to keep it from rocking back and forth. Just some simple stuff.
Absolutely.
I kind of think that comes back to that bare minimum of like what you should be looking for. And it goes back to that course that we just took, right? I mean, that's going back a while now, but
it's like a year ago.
Yeah, right. Just the other day. But yeah, like that was the big thing, is get out and make it safe to assess, yeah. Right? So it's not safe to work, but safe to assess. Mm-hmm. So a couple of step chocks or whatever goes a long way in just making sure nothing else is going to happen. If it's up on its side, if it's on its roof, even if it's on its wheels, I mean, when are we ever dead level? Like, let's make that thing so it's not going to go. Like, on that call up there, like, we didn't know what we had yet. And, like, I was already given, like, we have our tool belt. I was given that to the back. I think I gave it to Scott.
Yeah.
I had, like, Scott and one of our other officers were in the back. So, like, I'm not going to be like, all right, guys, this is what I want out of you. Like, it's pretty self-explanatory on a lot of these calls, especially when we don't have the information yet. Like, there's no sense making a plan because it's going to change as soon as we know it. But bare minimum, I knew, hey, let's make the scene safe. Let's make the vehicle safe. So we got the tools to the back, and then we'll figure it out from that point forward. But like, those are like those bare minimum things. Let's make sure the vehicle's safe. Let's make sure the scene is safe. And then start to expand from that point. Right. But you can't even go in. You can't even enter or even enter the scene until you know everything's safe.
Yeah. And that comes down to like many different styles and scenarios, right? Like you said, you know, even if it's just a basic vehicle on its all four wheels still, you know, is it in gear? Is the engine running? Is it a vehicle with a fob? Is the key in the ignition? If it's a fob and we power it down, remove the fob from that zone, right? So nothing can be repowered. Mm-hmm. Like all these little things that a lot of people don't think about, that's super key to that primary stabilization and scene safety thing.
Right.
Then you talk about the electric vehicles. You don't even know they're on half the time. And sometimes we get a little bit hyper-focused on the patient and other scene stuff where it's like, oh shit, this electric vehicle is still energized and in gear. Yeah. Right? Like all these little things. So simple chocks. And it comes down to, in the fire world, you know, our 316 survey and then your primary stabilization. Then you get into the secondary stuff when you start talking about struts and other things. If it's on the roof and it could potentially crush into the cabin, right? Yeah. So that's you can do your secondary now. So you need that primary done first and then get into that to make it really safe.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, and usually what I do is I take the keys out of the vehicle if it has keys, and then I put it on the roof. So I know it's if it's on its roof or if it's on its wheels. I mean, just so we know. That's where it is. Even the other day, we had a Peds truck.
Yeah.
So an older fella ran over another older fella, I guess. So we get there, and it's just already on scene. They were just putting the patient in the ambulance when we arrived. But the guy that ran the guy over, he's kind of like shaken up, the older guy. And I'm like, wasn't really sure if he was like
gonna, quite risk.
Gonna drive away or gonna actually drive away. He wasn't like saying, I'm getting out of here. But, you know, you just never know with these people. So I'm like, hey, so I poke my head. I'm like, hey, just to make everything safe. Cause it, like, if it's this front light was kind of hanging off, I said, just make everything safe here. Can you just hand me your keys? So I put them on the roof. But yeah, perfect. Yeah, you can sit in here all you want and find your insurance papers and stuff.
Yeah.
Yeah, I didn't want me to just be like, I'm out of here, drive away, or B, just forget where he was or whatever, and decide to back up and run one of us over while we're standing by that, where we were looking at what to do with the blood and stuff, like rinse it out or whatever.
Yeah. So, yeah, which is great, because you then gave that info to me as the IC, and I went over to one of the RCMP officers and said, hey, so the driver's over there. We just grabbed the keys. They're up on the roof. They're grabbing all their information. And then again, on that one, I'm like, you have the witness that was following behind, saw everything happen. They're in their vehicle, directed behind. Everything's great. But I think that's a super easy thing, even when there's no major damage, just to remove those keys and make that safe, right?
Yeah.
I think sometimes
shock is a crazy thing.
Sometimes we forget this vehicle was in motion when it came to a stop. Mm-hmm. It hasn't been put in park.
Yeah,
a lot of times
it could roll off. Yeah. Like we just sometimes we forget that, and that's where chalking the wheels even.
Mm-hmm. Well, I remember when I got rear-ended once in the middle of Surrey, which is like major city, so and down Lower Mainland. So I got rear-ended. So I'm like a week after I got my new car, get rear-ended. I'm like, yes. And then I look back behind me and I get out and like, we're in a major intersection and the person hit me, her airbag went off. So she's panicking and I don't know if she tried to put it in park, but she put it in like neutral. So now our vehicle is now rolling because we're on a little bit of a slope. It's now rolling back into the intersection. Cars are like driving by.
Yeah.
So I like run down and I dive into the, I jam it in a park for her because right. we're about to roll into an intersection and cause major accident.
Yeah. Like, ah.
Mm-hmm. Then you came back to the vehicle and it's three other people you didn't know. Yeah. That.
Wait, man.
Yeah. Actually, that's when I first, Surrey Fire shows up and they're like, you heard? I'm like, nope. They're like, they fill out some little form there. Here you go. Like, if you're not hurt, nothing's drivable, get out of here. I'm like, okay. Like, because we don't want you around and we don't want her around and we want everybody to leave and
yeah.
we don't want to tie this intersection any longer. We don't want any weird, like, people showing up for insurance claims and don't want any fights. I'm like, okay. So they just gave me like some kind of form they had. And,
nice. Yeah.
Yeah. All the information on
off. Off you went.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
That's funny. Something that people don't think about in today's day and age is there's less and less. We had just a small accident south of town many years ago. And I go up and check on one of the vehicles, and it's a manual. So there was nobody in it at the time, but the whole front end was smashed. Like it was smashed in. So instead of just doing the e-brake, I reach in and find neutral. If you got wires that are, damaged or whatever, if something arcs out, that starter can start, and mm-hmm. if it's in gear, it can actually start to creep itself forward.
Right.
So I've definitely kept that with me for years. Like, it's just something that you generally wouldn't think about being a manual versus auto, as there's less and less of them. Mm-hmm. But throw that thing in neutral, because if things do happen, I mean, all of the electrical is all fucked. So.
Well, there's some amazing videos on YouTube of a little bit of a car fire, and that mm-hmm. happens. It
kicks the motor down. Motor bike. Mobile.
Motorbike. Yeah. The Ghost Rider motorbike?
Yes. those things do happen. Sure. I think that comes back to, like you said, Ash, like that there's the kind of the minimum do's that you need to be doing, and mm-hmm. then there's some of the must-dos. And I feel like that type of stuff falls into the category as the must-do.
Sure.
Making the scene safe, whether it's that minimal cribbing the stabilization, mm-hmm. or just wheel chocks, whatever it may be, depending on the patient's condition and where they are.
Yeah.
And then, of course, fire suppression, if you have a extinguisher out as well, or if you're going to be stretching line, whatever, mm-hmm. as long as there's something out. But just not focusing in on certain patients, because sometimes that happens. Like, we'll roll up and there'll be like one really bad one, and then somebody else will sit in the vehicle, and everybody focuses in on that one. And it's like, well, vehicle's maybe not safe yet, and they're still sitting in there. Mm-hmm. So maybe we need to remove them first.
Yeah.
So you got to look at it, the time frame, as far as like, okay, like, when's EHS coming? Like, if I'm responding as fire, and okay, like, can I make this safe or not? Or do we just need to do a quick little drag, get them out if they're easily accessible to make it safe if I can't make that vehicle safe?
Right.
So there's lots of ways to look at it, but there's definitely some of the must-dos we need to all be looking for and doing.
Sure.
I think something that comes down to training, too. You have to train. We train just decentralized commands. So our guys, when we go to an accident, it's like everybody just starts working. Mm-hmm. No one's waiting. No one's waiting to be told what to do. Everyone just starts, like Ash just says, hey, we need to stabilize. So
yeah, exactly.
We can say, grab some blocks, grab some cribs, whatever, grab, mm-hmm. grab some struts. Let's go to work, depending on what we need.
Yeah.
So one team starts stabilizing, but no one needs to be like, hey, okay, Todd, now it's time for you to be down here and stabilize. No, it's like those guys start stabilizing. Yeah.
Yeah.
And it's like, we don't even really talk to each other. We just do it. Like, we just start, mm-hmm. start going. And then usually eventually one of the captains say, hey, this is what's happening. And I see, he's like, perfect. So it's not like that. I think there's an old school method of like, hey, everybody just wait here until I tell you what to do. I think we've gotten away from that, mm-hmm. in the fire service in general. I think they've, just from doing more IC courses, it's not just in this job, but my other job, we're definitely, they're starting to embrace more of that. I don't want to say it's Jocko, it's more like that military mentality of mm-hmm. Everybody's smart enough to take on the role. I think the military mentality used to be, people used to think you wait until you're given your assignment. And that was like World War One military mentality.
Right.
And I think the fire service was stuck in that World War One military mentality. It was like, you wait to be told to go over that wall and don't do anything else until I tell you to. Whereas, as they start getting World War Two, they're like, oh, wait, these, the units can go do things without us having to tell them everything. And then, more and more. I don't think the fire service caught up for a while. I think there is still like, everything's like ranked like brigades and battalions and stuff. That's all military. Sure. Yeah. Like all that stuff is military stuff. So then they're all stuck back in the past. Finally, I think we're catching up to like truly what the military is now, which is think for yourself a little bit. Well, actually a lot. Think for yourself a lot and just always make sure you're not super far off board, but you're making sure you're
and that's where what's going on. And that's where it comes down to is like when we're coming up in the truck, you know, like if the four of us are in the truck and if I'm in charge, I'm going to say, okay, you know, you two, why don't you guys get out there and stabilize, make that safe. Scott, you're going to go do this. I'm going to do whatever. Or if duty officer already there, IC's already there. Okay, you guys have your roles. I'm going to go quick little face-to-face, get some updated information that we may not have yet, and then we'll relay it back. And that's exactly what you're saying. Like, so everybody's trained up well enough to do all the tasks. And then, you know, you have your role, then you regroup and change your mission.
I always find accidents and structure fires, and they're pretty easy to manage, actually, because you're really IC. You just kind of take a big step back. Like you're basically as far away as you can. While still seeing the scene, and just and then it, you can see things that aren't that are odd, like you're like, why is that guy standing there? What's he doing? What's going on over there? What's so those things you pick up on, and then you just correct one guy, like, hey, no, we don't need that done yet. And then you get away from that. Or hey, what do you don't play with the power line, like things like that. You know, I don't want to leave anywhere fast, but but you know, just right away by us being detached and taking a step back, like in the last few we've done, last few accidents we've done on the highway, they've all been off the highway. But the IC's stood off the on the highway and just looked down the scene. It's great. You stand there.
Yeah, it works out perfect.
Yeah, and like you said, like having those the small groups with the task, you know, you've got the commander's intent already, and away you go, and you're off and rolling. And then as things evolve, as the scene evolves, you know, you guys start getting freed up because they've done that task. And you just naturally mold into that next task that's needed, right? But yeah, those are some of the musts, and being able to slow it down and figure out those key things we need to do right away is super key, in my opinion, rolling up as a medic with none of those things in my toolbox to do. Like that's where I'm really relying on the fire to do all that stuff. So we got to work as a team, got to communicate. And sometimes medics, we need to step back and wait until that stuff is done before we can get in. So there's always a bit of a rush, it seems like, especially if somebody's really fucked up, they really want to, like, oh, hey, come in here. And then you get totally hyper-focused and narrowed in on this one guy. And it's like, oh, shit, airbags haven't gone off. And, oh, the battery, the lights are still on, and they don't even have cribbing out yet. And, oh, shit, right? Okay, hang on, I need to step back.
Another thing we want to talk about tonight was I was actually did a thing for my work where I was the IC a couple weeks ago. And in my debrief, there was the operational debrief, and then right below that it talks about SISM. I'm like, I'm like, well, nothing happened. So I get at the operational side, I had to debrief my guys, of course, and then I get to the SISM part. I'm like, I just put nothing happened. And then the person that was reviewing it, they're like, well, you got to do the SISM debrief. I'm like, no, I'm like, nothing happened. What did you ask everybody if they needed SISM? I'm like, no, nothing happened. Like, it wasn't like a crazy operation. Like, it was, I mean, the operation was interesting, but it was like nothing that I would deem stressful really happened. And I, like, all the guys were like, no one was stressed out. It was just, you know, it took a lot of planning. It wasn't like an event, like a fire event. There was a lot of pre-plan to it. And we just did it. So yeah, I don't know, thoughts on operational versus.
I think the big thing, like you can't confuse the two, right? Like you said, like yours was a very pre-planned event. So it's always good to have an operational debrief to see how it went as well. But a lot of our calls that we get sent out as fire departments, was nothing pre-planned. Like, it kind of is. We know how to respond to these things. But
the only pre-planning you really have is your training.
Exactly.
Like, that's the only pre-planning you have.
Yeah, exactly. But like when it comes down to the operational debrief, you know, you definitely want to have everybody who is hands-on involved in the call. And you can expand out a little bit to other people who were listening to the comms or other tasks and stuff. You know, like as long as we're not mixing up, like, okay, hey, this guy was really messed up. He's missing half his body or whatever. Like, that's a SISM debrief with a very small group of guys who had that intimate hands-on or visual connection with him. Everybody else that was doing tasks that was still super pertinent to that scene, they don't need to be involved in that SISM because they weren't by the patient.
Right. Sure.
But everybody needs to be part of that operational debrief.
Yeah.
So there's the two, like operations.
Everybody, including people that were even there.
Yeah, absolutely. Sure. Like, because you can still have guys in the hall or on the other truck or the guy doing traffic. Like, he's listening to the comms. He's seeing what's going on and hearing guys and watching them running around. And especially if you're an officer and whatnot, like, that, as command staff, we need to be involved in that. So if there's any questions arise, we're all kind of privy to how, where people's levels are at far as how they did it. And it's also important in that operational debrief to not criticize. You know, don't criticize somebody. Like, say, hey, Rob, you know, what was your role in that call? Oh, I thought I was I was in the back seat and I was tasked with cribbing and this and that. Okay, great. Is there, name one thing you could have done better and two things that you felt really did well. Right. So you're the one saying, hey,
like there's two stars and a wish there.
Right. Absolutely. But that's how you do an operational debrief.
Yeah.
So I'm not going to be like, well, Rob, you know, yeah, you really fucked up on that. You didn't do that at all. Well, you should have done this and this and this. Right. No, it's none of this. You should.
Rob would never have a car roll away.
No, I'd never have a car. Not an incident.
Maybe a little fart duck.
Maybe a fart.
But
we will never let that go.
Operational debrief.
That's why it's like we.
Oh, we. I thought you meant we as in a group will never let it go on him. I'm like, you
just. No. We'll show you that story after. Yeah, but operational debriefs, it's not a time to criticize. It's time to empower the members and have that self-reflection on debriefing that call personally and be like, hey, you know what? Yeah, I should have done this better, or I didn't really hear what I was supposed to do, but I went and did it anyways.
Yeah.
So I know I should have asked for clarification.
Yeah.
Just as an example, right? And then finish it off as, yeah, and I felt I grabbed this hose or I did this, I popped that door really well. Perfect. And then as the officer leading the debrief, hey, I agree. That's great. Thanks, Rob. Anything we want to talk about or table after? Yeah, let's talk about this. Kate, you write it down on the board or something, right? It's just another option of how you do a debrief. But yeah, you go around the table that way. Then everybody's kind of builds their own picture of how it went and how we could improve from. And then so Rob's a little note of, hey, you know, I should have grabbed this piece of equipment for the cribbing instead of whatever. You know, write it down. So then we talk about it at the end. Say, okay, so we wrote down four things on the board here, things that we could have done better, this, this, and this. So let's practice that next couple of times, right?
Right.
So that's how you build the team.
I like Scott's two stars and a wish. We've done that a couple of times in our training scenarios, and especially as officers where you're, okay, two stars, it shows the guys that we're paying attention to what those guys are doing, or maybe a particular person that are doing something really well, but also that wish coming from us, what is something that I could have done better, not saying what they could have done better, what is something I could have done better. That way they know that I'm not focusing on just what they're doing, but also what I'm doing, positive or negative on the fire ground.
Yeah, you know, absolutely. I think that's super, super key that when you're doing that round table debrief or you're going around to everybody, I found it's easy to overlook like the top, right? So when it's us, like, hey, I can still reflect back and see all those things that hey, I think as an overall scene, I think this went well, this went well, sure. But those things like Rob says, hey, like I really wish that, you know, I called for Fortis gas faster, or man, I sure wish we got the second tender rolling because we were kind of running low on water there for a couple moments or whatever, right? Like if you can reflect back on things that you're, you know, realizing that maybe you can do better as well, it shows, I think, the team that like we're all in this together as well, right? Kind of brings that cohesiveness together.
And I think even as incident command, you're focusing, okay, that officer did well at doing this getting ready. Mm-hmm. He did really well at getting this ready. Maybe I didn't give him enough support in that decision or something like that.
Right.
You know, that the IC is going to be further back from, like you said, further back from the scene and see what his officers are doing. The officers are going to see what his firefighters are doing. And that's, you know, it's good. That way it shows too that the IC is seeing what's going on the fire ground.
Mm-hmm. And, you know, like, it's beneficial to everyone, like you said. Everybody needs to be involved in that. It builds that team cohesiveness and the camaraderie and the trust.
Yeah.
And then everyone's on the same page hey, these are the things we could have all done better as a group. We're going to talk about them. We're going to practice them. We've already discussed them rather than, you know, hey guys, that call went really good. Yeah. Good job. All right. See you next week.
Right.
And then you sit at home by yourself. You're like, oh, why the hell did I ask you that? Like, that seemed kind of stupid. Like, you know, like, it shouldn't be any of that. Right. Yeah. So by having that operational debrief with everybody involved, it's great.
And then I don't like necessarily remember you.
I got a hammy. Too much yard work today.
I'm not massaging you. I'm going to do yard work around here.
Don't wake me. I'm dying. Somebody give me a banana stat. Fuck. And of course, we're videotaping. God damn it.
Oh, this is the best.
So everybody's having a moment of silence for Todd here. I think that's what I was going to say. Oh, I know what I was going to say. Can I talk? Are you?
I'm good.
What I was going to say was when we do a debrief, I don't always I don't necessarily go around the whole room if it's like, you know, if there's 30 guys, I'm not going to be like, and Ash, how did you feel about this? And like, it's like, you know, I know, you know, and definitely the officers that are there should be saying something.
Yeah.
And then I kind of leave it to the, you know, unless I, you know, we throw it out there, anyone else have anything to say. Most guys don't have anything to say.
Round two. Oh, it's the worst.
But they might. So we need to pause.
Plus some water?
Let's pause for a second.
I'm good.
He's back.
All right. All right.
Two leg hammy's going.
Jesus. But we don't force the guys to do the debrief. Like,
yeah.
But I think doing the two stars and a wish, maybe when they do go back home, they will, they'll think rather than.
Give some time to reflect.
They'll hopefully think, oh, what are the two things that guys did good? And then what could have been better? Hopefully getting away from the, I'm not sure it's better on the radio or like, you know, like this is faster. So.
I was going to say, I think too.
I wish Todd drank more water today.
Yeah. Salts.
With your operational debrief too, it's handy to have everybody there. Even if they weren't involved, they're sitting at the hall. They can hear firsthand the accounts of what was going on, what was being done, rather than maybe hearing secondhand or making up stories for themselves as well. Gets everybody on the same page.
Yeah. And I really found it helpful by having the pieces of wood and the sidewalk chalk. Cause we used to do debriefs in the hall, like sitting around the table and everyone's like, I don't understand what happened. And you're trying to explain, and they're like, I don't really know what happened? Where
I have to find line, Like, you don't want to recreate the whole thing again.
Yeah.
But it is important for everybody to kind of get on the same page.
Yeah.
But where I was just thinking as you were talking there with that.
How much your legs hurt.
Absolutely. I lost it. Continue.
Okay.
A fine line between, right?
Yeah.
Great. Yeah, I mean, you're not like bringing out like photos of the incident and stuff.
That's what.
Sorry. All right.
So it's a fine line with your operational debrief. You don't want to overexpose people who were involved in the incident.
Right.
However, that's more towards the CISM patient care stuff for traumatic events, right? If we're just talking about an operational debrief, like, hey, we did a car fire, bush fire, grass fire, whatever, right? With no patients involved. We can definitely hash that out a little bit more with everybody. But if it's just back to that CISM style, then we don't want to talk in a large group with that because we don't want people to relive things and things like that.
And I think what we do in our debriefs anyways, when we do these operational debriefs, especially if it's like a fatal or something, it's like in the last few times we've had a fatal, it's like and this is where the patient was. And we kind of brush over it like quickly.
Mm-hmm.
Obviously, you talk to the guys that were there and dealing with it more thoroughly.
Yeah.
But we kind of just, and there was a patient, and unfortunately, he passed away. And then we carry on. And so everyone's like, oh, yeah. Everyone knows. Everyone knows that happened. So.
But that's also important for everybody in that group to know because, as we know, small towns, we all get asked. Yeah. Yes, there's confidentiality. We don't divulge a lot of that stuff.
Yeah.
However, you know, when somebody you really know is asking something about it, it's very easy to say, yeah, we attended a bad wreck. Oh, I heard somebody died. And you need to choose the best response for that. You say, yes, unfortunately, somebody passed away, but I can't talk about it.
Yeah.
Done. Period. Yeah. Moving on, right?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Rather than, oh, really? I didn't hear that. Oh, I was on the other truck. And, you know, like, don't build that picture.
Yeah.
Right? Like, control the information.
Mm-hmm. And I guess, you know, if it was one of those bad calls where, you know, maybe there was a fatal, maybe, you know, there was some work being done, something that could leave, I guess, a spot for a schism to happen. Maybe let's chat about that for, like, when those instances happen, like, how do you pull those guys aside? Mm-hmm. What do you recommend? Like, how would that chat go? How would that debrief go? So, like, you know, we kind of chatted about the overall scene. So now let's break it down and talk about, hey, so, like, us four were just on this call. We were all on a truck. We dealt with that person that was, you know,
another hamster pull.
Yeah, maybe.
Yeah, double hamstrings.
Double hammy pulls. You know, how would something like that roll out?
Yeah, so basically you want one kind of schism team lead, mm-hmm. that was not involved in the incident. So they're a completely neutral party that can kind of steer the conversations. And with that one, again, you know, like, you just have to, it's very delicate because dealing with people's emotions and feelings. And part of that, it's important also knowing your group, mm-hmm. on who's comfortable to talk and share. We're never going to force people to talk and share. Mm-hmm. But we want to give them a comfortable.
Right back in the day.
Oh, yeah, right back in the day.
Everybody has to say something.
Right.
Yeah. Well, it wasn't even that far long ago, right? Where they say, okay, well, we're absolutely going around this table and each one of you are going to talk. No, we're not doing that. It's, you know, we're going to have some crosstalk. If we start talking about operations, it's the team leader with the system to shut that down. But, hey, thanks. Good point there, Rob. But however, we're not going to talk about that. It's, mm-hmm. more about what you did for the patient and how that made you feel, mm-hmm. things like that, right? And it's a bit tricky. That's why the system training is multiple days, right? It's very challenging to navigate that stuff. And then leaving everybody on a note that, hey, we're always here to come back and talk, you know, there's certain time frames. If there's a natural time frame it takes for you to actually decompress and process everything. Mm-hmm. And then also with that, hey, like, we have other avenues for you to reach out to if you don't want to reach back to us. Having the chiefs or deputy chiefs in the loop of, hey, these people were involved, have it documented somewhere that there was a traumatic event, mm-hmm. Documented, and that can go into Fire Pro. So then years down the road, if something ever happens, works, you can say, hey, look, you know, Todd was exposed to this many things and it can be looked at, right? Mm-hmm. You know, like, the chiefs and deputy chiefs, they don't need to know it was specifically all of us by name. Like, if somebody says, hey, I'm, you know, oh, a schism has been activated or the counselor has been activated for Scott, well, then something went wrong because it should just be, hey, counselor was activated for a member of your department.
Right.
Like, it shouldn't actually have any names attached to that if it goes, mm-hmm. to that step. But of course, being in a close family group, Scott, we all kind of know if somebody's
the fire friends just sitting around there.
Yeah.
Fire group. My fire group.
But also that can be very beneficial, right? Like, we've all had a lot of calls we've all gone to together over the years. Mm-hmm. And, you know, by knowing, hey, if somebody's kind of bothered by it, sometimes it's nice to have that familiar face to debrief to.
Sure.
So that can also be a benefit.
So I think you kind of chatted about it there. So obviously there is a like a schism team lead or a counselor, a peer that's going to be leading this. Who else would be good or bad to speak to? Like, is this one of the things that, like, hey, like, I had this rough call and you know what? I run into Rob, and Rob, you know, wasn't there. And I'm like, man, buddy, like, that guy was fucked. He had double hammies, and I just can't get that picture out of my head. He's flailing around in his chair, and I just wake up at night, and all I can see is Todd. And trust me, that's not something I wish for anybody. Because I've had that happen, too. What's happening out there? Oh, Jesus.
There's a mouse.
Yeah, exactly. Now, like, as a fellow firefighter and friend, is that something recommended? Like, hey, like, we can chat as a group, and or should you really go back to that peer counselor or whatever it is?
I think it depends on your personal relationship with other people, mm-hmm. as far as what you're comfortable with sharing.
Right.
Like, there's and we even, like, in our department and even in the ambulance world, we talk about, hey, like, okay, yes, I'm a schism peer for my station, but some people may be totally open to talking to me. Others, mm-hmm. like, yeah, I worked with Todd for a long time, but I don't have that relationship with him, so I don't want to bring that up, you know,
right.
go to somebody else.
Mm-hmm.
You know, whereas like I've talked to other people who are not CISM people at all, just trusted peers, and you sit down and you have a chat, right?
Right. Like I know it works for me, right?
Yeah.
Like that works for me. That's my thing. Right or wrong. I'll talk to the wife. I'll talk to you guys or whoever else. Right. And obviously like if I'm at home, I'm not going to be like, yeah, honey, like it was crazy. This happened and this happened. But like being able to just like, hey, like, yeah, it was pretty bad. And you know, unfortunately it didn't go the right, you know, not the right way, but it didn't go the positive way. But you know, we still did everything that, you know, we could. And yeah, it's just kind of sitting with me there for a bit. And she's like, oh, yeah, okay. And I find for me, that's really good because if I get quiet later on in the day or a day or so later, then she's aware.
She might know why.
Yeah. Right.
Yeah. And I was just going to mention as well on that, like it is super important to be able to talk to your significant other or your spouse with these, because there's a lot of opinions out there like, no, you guys, we talk about it here. You can't talk about it anywhere else with anyone else. You can't talk about your wife or husband. And it's like, no, that's not the case. It's completely the opposite, actually.
Yeah.
You need to have that trusting bond and conversation.
Sure.
Because if something, if I start going off the rails, who's going to notice it first?
Sure.
Them.
Yeah.
So again, like you just mentioned, may not get into the details, but gentle, hey, this is what happened. Yeah. You know, I don't want to talk about it right now. And at least they're aware, right?
Mm-hmm. The way that you're explaining it is like telling people, no, bottle up your emotions and deal with it.
Yeah.
And that's how a lot of people, unfortunately, get some mental illnesses is because of all the stuff that they've seen or bottled up and don't know how to deal with it now.
Yeah. Sure. And you can't leave it as, you know, you can't talk about anybody. You can't talk to any of your spouses or anybody else about this. If there's an issue, you come back to me.
Right.
Yeah.
Well, that's
fuck that.
No. Pretty arms wide open.
No.
Yeah. For one person.
I think to Ash's question about who you should talk to, I mean, you have to know the person that you're asking to, if I can talk to about
it,
is going to be somebody that can be able to handle what you might be going through, right?
Very good point. Yeah.
You know, you might approach me and I'll be fine to talk to you back about it.
Right.
But you're not going to approach a new person who's been on a department for a couple of weeks and say, hey, can I run this by you? Because now you're just laying loads of stuff on them.
Yeah, sure. When their eyes go big and they go, holy shit. Okay, I'm going to stop talking.
No, they're carrying half of your load.
And I find sometimes the CISM people aren't like, they're not like super, like when they get selected, it's not like a huge selection process in some places. It's like literally like, who wants to be, it's like the Krusty the Clown thing in Simpsons. Mm-hmm. Who wants to be the CISM guy? Yeah, you can be. Me? Yeah, sure. It's like, you know, I remember at my work, we had a use of force incident, and it was pretty minor in our world, but they sent a CISM person down to talk to this guy that was involved. I'm at my desk and I hear the CISM lady show up and she starts kind of CISMing the officer that was there. And I'm like, I'm kind of listening. I'm at my computer, I'm typing, and I can hear her saying, you know, I heard you had an use of force yesterday. And he's like, yep. And he didn't catch all what was going on. He's typing away on the computer. He's like, yeah. And he's kind of like, yeah, it was simple. This guy was being an idiot and blah, blah, blah. And he's kind of talking about it. And she goes, you know, when these incidents happen, you might have trouble sleeping. Like, she's totally like, she's got like a playbook
going right? through her list. Yeah.
And I'm like, I kind of roll my chair to the side. I'm listening. And she's like, you know, you might have issues sleeping. He's like, and he's still not catching on with
he doesn't know he's being seasoned.
Like, he's like, looking. He's like, yeah. Okay. Yeah, sure. Yeah. And he keeps typing. And I'm like, hey, I'm like, are you giving him CISM right now? She's like, yeah, I had to come down and give him. I said, no. I said, that isn't yesterday. I'm like, we talked about it. He's fine. I'm like, I just want to, you know, he was a vet from Afghanistan and he's been in multiple gunfights. I'm like, that thing we did yesterday, I'm like, it might have pushed him over the edge, but I don't think it did. And then he realizes, he's like, what? No. He's like, I'm totally fine. But it's just like that whole, like, he didn't even know what's going on. And, you know, sometimes they get sent people that are just, you know, they think in theory CISM is a good thing for them to, they want to take it on. But then when they actually get into it, they're like, oh, this, maybe I'm not really qualified for being a teacher.
Well, and that's the one thing. It's funny, like even with the fire department, like with our CISM team, like everybody kind of like, hey, who wants to do it? Like you said, oh yeah, we'll do it. We'll do it. And then you get into it.
Kind of looking at people like,
but it may work. You know, like for us in the ambulance, like we're actually, you apply And then you're vetted by a psychologist as well. They call you for a huge long interview and make sure that your mental health is good and you know how to support and you can handle it.
Yeah.
And then you go to the week-long training, right?
Mm-hmm. And I think that's finally how like our agencies went. I don't know the other agencies, but we also went back. Like when we propose a CISM officer, they call and the psychologist talks to them and, you know, for a week. Yeah.
That's by far a better way. Cause like you said, Rob, like you start opening up to somebody not thinking that they're going to crack the book. And all of a sudden they open up tenfold. Like, oh, okay. Now
you're taking on
that. You really able to stick handle this, right?
For sure. So. And knowing, or even like not knowing the person, you know, you say you've got this group of people and whoever puts up their hand and I'm going to be that guy. And, you know, in 3 or 4 years, you have a couple new firefighters that come in and like, they don't know us as well as we know each other now. And let's say that our group had two, we had a Scott and we had a Rob, and knowing both of you guys well, the support or whatever between the two of you would be vastly different.
Do you call them family? Because I don't.
Still really burned about that. No, but what's funny though is like I actually value Scott's whatever. Well, no, because like it's very to the point and it's clear and you know like. Yeah, I mean that sucked. The guy's fucked. All right,
moving on.
That guy was fucked. Yep. Yeah. But Rob's like, oh, that guy was pretty fun. You doing all right, buddy? Yeah. Okay, great. And we still move on.
Okay. Yeah.
But every person will break an incident down differently.
Yeah.
And I think it's great. And that for me, what I was going to get to there was, it's not a bad idea to have like if you're going to be reaching out to peers. You know, don't just, if you're okay with it, don't just reach out to one. Reach out to, like, two people that you can, you know, like, really confide in. Because you're going to get two different avenues of assistance.
Sure. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah, and you can't just have a blanket, like, when everybody comes back to the hall, like, okay, everybody's good. Yeah, okay, good, thanks. And leave. Like,
you know, we have a number for a guy.
Yeah, that is literally for the longest time. You're somebody, like, yeah, there's a number here. You give that.
I still don't know where that number is. Yeah. Here's mine. Not that I needed it, but I just don't know where that it is.
Yeah.
We're figuring on it. You know, like,
that's the thing, right? Like, there's the two big differences in the DBs, right? There's the CISM style versus the operational one. There's a lot more people can need to be included.
Yeah.
So that's very key.
And timelines for the two are quite different as well.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, operational one is good to have right after. Sometimes, of course, being put on call of volunteer departments, you can't right away.
Might be the following week.
Yeah, but might do it again. But yeah, the CISM one as well, you may need a check-in or a bumper talk right afterwards versus for sure within the next kind of 24 to 36 hours.
Yeah.
And then if you're having a formal debrief, which is different, then you've got a specific time frame. You need to sit down and have it.
Mm-hmm.
And that's all based on science and how our brains and chemicals process everything, right?
Sure.
Yeah.
All right. So are we good?
That's all I got. I'm good.
Fire family.
I'm back in.
All right. Yeah, I think we're going to wrap. I don't know if this is it early. I don't even know what time we were at.
50 minutes.
Yeah.
Beautiful.
Sorry. Perfect.
Yeah, we're going to wrap, obviously, seminar week. I don't know if it's obvious. August, yeah, it's a seminar week. So seminar this Friday. Starts on Friday.
Yep.
Hopefully weather cooperates. It doesn't look like it's going to, but that's okay. It's still... lots of fire. And
we'll still make it happen.
Yeah. Yeah, we still have to make it happen. It's going to happen. So, but before we talk, well, I guess part of it is MODIS. They're going to be there. So, MODIS.
Yep, MODIS. Claim to Fame is their snagger tool. They got a ton of other stuff there. They're actually just wrapping up or have just wrapped up FDIC. So, that's cool. We've got some videos and stuff for their products. They're some soft entry kit. We got some... I think they have a YouTube video on their hydrant wrench still kicking on our YouTube. Ton of stuff out there. Check them out on their socials. Check them out on ours. And watch for all the info coming out from seminar because there's going to be a ton of Motus related content coming down the pipe. If you like what you see, discount code GTFF5. If you are at the seminar, there is a special promo, so watch for that.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And there's some gift bags, or not gift bags, there's some giveaways that we're going to do.
Yep.
People that are on our social media, like to transfer over to our new site.
Yep.
So, yeah, people watching for that. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Todd, let's talk about Manscaped.
Manscaped, your balls will thank you. Yep. Good products from Manscaped. Keep everything freshly groomed and trimmed. And you know that directly corresponds into what we do in the fire service as far as keeping yourself clean in the nether regions, because one of the big areas where we get a lot of contaminants and cancer is testicular cancer and stuff and groin. So, yeah, that helps keeping the shrubs bush trimmed.
Fire smart the old...
Yeah, do some fire smarting down south.
Fire smart the tree.
So the Lawnmower 4.0, the Weed Whacker 2.0, they've got a crop mops, a bunch of greens, a whole bunch of products that are really good. So check them out. And the code for that is DTFF20. Mm-hmm. We'll get you 20% off and free shipping.
Nice. Boom. You want to take a crack at Stop the Bleed?
Stop the Bleed.
What? No, I'm straight. Yeah.
You have to tourniquet that.
Yeah.
Three methods of blood bleeding control, wound packing, direct pressure, and tourniquet.
Nice. Boom. See? Oh. Mm-hmm.
Well, I will not forget those ones.
Don Webbs, yeah. If you want to become an instructor or...
check out our YouTube. We got a video on there as well. You can go to stopbleed.org.ca to give you some information as well. And a lot of first responders and other individuals can become an instructor. The big thing with that is it is a very basic course for general public, so make it fun and as realistic as possible. That's what we've done. We've got all the little wound packing aids that we've created for fairly cheap. Get a bunch of tourniquets, get some training supplies, and have fun with it.
And you're going to be teaching Stop the Bleed at the seminar,
right? We will, yeah. I'm going to be teaching Stop the Bleed. So I got a little condensed version of it because we only got an hour-long session for potentially a large group of people. So we're going to do a couple quick little videos and real fast PowerPoint discussion, then boom, outside, all hands-on. We're going to do some scenarios and some tourniquet applications and wound packing stuff. So.
Yeah. And then on my side of the fence, I'm going to be teaching the active shooter side. So it'll also have a little bit of wound packing, or sorry, tourniquet application, a little bit of triaging. And I was actually the other day, because where I'm doing it, I'm doing it inside of a classroom and then a hallway where I can't run the fake blood, because you're going to be outside for doing your fake blood. So what I actually went and did, I got some felt, like red felt, you know, like not felt.
Yeah, like the material.
Yeah, and then I cut it, little pools of blood. So that'll be like guys lying down, we'll throw a pool of red felt by their legs, just for a visual when they come in, they can see
right
at a glance, like big pool of blood, little pool of blood, where it's coming from. Just, I mean, it's not realistic, but it's as real as realistic as I could probably make it on short notice and without damaging carpets and walls. And
yeah, I think we'd be staining a lot of shit.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So that's my level of realism for this right now. I'm going to throw in maybe a couple of things, like a little smoke alarm going off. And maybe a little bit of mist in the air from a smoke detector, and probably a Bluetooth speaker with some screaming going on. So
sweet.
Make it realistic, but make it so I don't destroy the room. Where are we at? Wolf Tree Coffee.
Oh, sure. Yeah, Wolf Tree Coffee. We've been drinking that again tonight. We've got our initial attack blend. It's a medium dark roast. It's going to be for sale at seminar and then following. They are a roastery out of all over BC, doing deliveries up and down the valley once a week right now, working on doing shipping as well. So watch for that. So our listeners, if you want to get involved in that, you will be able to, I believe, shortly. Check them out on Facebook and Instagram, Wolf Tree Coffee Company.
Right. And Tanner Olson.
Tanner Olson Band touring out of Oliver next week. So check them out, all your listening platforms, and they're going to be at the Fire Palooza for the concert afterwards.
Was listening to that on my way in.
Hey, there we go.
Woo!
So yeah, they're gonna be at the concert. It's gonna be awesome. Yeah, I'm really looking forward to it. When they were here at the 100 year, they're fantastic. Okay. I think it's gonna be a really, really fun time.
Last thing is us. This week, like I said, seminar. So check it out on. Well, if you don't have tickets yet, you're not getting tickets now. So so too bad. But yeah, if you want to check it out, we'll probably have lots of videos going. Ash's going to be rolling around. You don't have a session to teach, but you have lots of stuff to do. But hopefully you'll be able to do some live videos, maybe.
That's kind of what I was planning on, doing some lives, getting some of the info out there from the day. The wife's going to be down there also. So during some of the sessions, she'll be taking over some of our social media. Well, taking over, she'll be running our social media, as she always does. So she'll get some of that info out there as well. And then, tons of stuff coming afterwards. So,
Cool. And lastly, you can check us out on Facebook, YouTube, Instagram, TikTok, MySpace. Anyways, check us out anywhere you find anyone else on social media, basically.
Perfect.
Any more for any more?
No, sir.
Ash, fire family friend.
Thank you, and have a good night.
Thanks, everyone. Have a good one.
Rob.
Good night.
Good night, and stay safe, and stay DTFF.